This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit BestWestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're going to go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Hit him. Go get that one, Henry.
Right here.
Ooh. Size of that deer.
What's going on? Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. Hopefully everyone had a wonderful 4th of July weekend. You're able to spend some good quality time with the family, maybe light some fireworks off and do all those things. Everyone stuck out their hands and their digits. That'd be good. But yeah, we had a great time with family. Smoked some wings, had some good foods, lit off a bunch of fireworks, smelled a lot of burning gunpowder-esque smells with that. So it was great. It was a good time. Little man really enjoyed it, staying up late, partying. And then, you know, hopefully you guys got a couple extra days off of work and able to get some things done. I know that I am knee deep in some home improvement projects right now, so it's going good, checking things off the box and taking advantage of the couple extra days off. Also got to spend some time on the boat. Henry caught his first bass, so he was pretty pumped. He's just using a bobber and in a worm, you know. He's caught some perch, he's caught some bluegills, just little fish, you know. He's still getting the hang of it. His casting is getting really good. It's just when you're floating around, you know, me and Ashley or whoever else goes with us like to, you know, try to catch the bass. We're floating around and not necessarily anchored up and don't really have that big of an anchor for the boat. So if it's windy, it just drags us anyways. But no, he caught his first bass and he was pumped. He was shaking. He was shaking like he had shot a deer. It was awesome. He was, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. And you know, struggling to get in the boat and stuff. It was good. Did my heart good seeing him do that. And he's super pumped for that. So it's a good time taking the family out and doing those things. But, you know, just because I'm knee-deep in these home projects, I'm going to try to keep this intro a little shorter this week. But essentially did not shoot 3D League this week because it was the week off, being the 4th. And which I still shot my bow quite a bit, so I'm still shooting that. But shooting the recurve, that's been a work in progress like it is every time. My shoulder feels good, so that's good so far. But just getting the finger strength back up and learning how to hit the form and do that. So I've been shooting that and shooting my compound. Both been going well this week, so that was cool. And then also, you know, going into this week's episode with Byron Horton from the Whitetail Experience, you know, he's a guy that I've, you know, watched a lot of his YouTube videos and been kind of followed, you know, along with other podcasts he did or does. He does his own podcast. He doesn't do very many of those anymore. He kind of has partnered up with over the Deer Hunter podcast with Kevin Vissis, and they do like a little series, and really enjoyed those episodes he's done. But he's always had a pretty good stance on, you know, technology in the hunting space. You know, a little controversy. He kind of goes against the grain. I mean, his thing is kind of like hard-earned, you know, team hard-earned bucks. And, you know, he hunts a lot of public ground. He does hunt private too, but like he just loves a challenge. And he also is like passionate about keeping hunting great, and he wants to see it for generations to come, just like me. So with that, you know, we kind of talk about some of this, you know, technology and what we do or don't like. Like, he doesn't like cell cams at all, you know, and I use cell cams, but I don't necessarily love them for like the opportunities that they do have for abuse is kind of like the thing. So we kind of dive into that. And then also crossbows is kind of a, you know, cell cams and crossbows are kind of like the things that you can, are like the current things that you can, you know, you can have be kind of polarizing on. Like, you either love them, you're okay with them, or you're like, ah, this sucks. And, you know, crossbows, I do like them for a few things. Like, obviously for people who are, you know, unable to pull a bow back, you know, they should still be able to get out there and hunt and, you know, enjoy that time, you know, then age, you know, so like little kids, you know, wherever you stand on having them hunt, a crossbow is a tool that you can use to get them in there for, you know, entry. It's a good entry into deer hunting using a crossbow. It's not loud. I get it. I get all those things with that. And then also for, you know, maybe some people who are up there and a little more seasoned, you know, like getting into a tree, climbing a tree might not be something they want to do anymore, or, you know, pulling the bow back and doing that, their bodies aren't, you know, same kind of thing as before, like with the other reason why I like it. You know, crossbow is a good tool for that too. Get guys out there and hunting, you know, when the weather's a little nicer, you know, easier to use in a ground blind situation or a blind in general. Totally on board with all that stuff. I get it. I get the concept. And, you know, they're super effective. I mean, they're a lethal weapon, right? It's just the problem I have with them is probably similar to the problem that the traditional guys have when compounds start coming out. It's like such an advancement in technology. Like, you lose the art of archery with a crossbow. You know, like, I'm seeing my son right now. He's been shooting his little bow in the backyard, and the thrill he gets from watching that arrow hit the target, he's just like enamored by it. And I think that's why we all love, all the guys who love archery hunting, is that in itself, like the art of launching an arrow, pulling it back, letting it go, and watching it connect where you want it to connect, is something about it that's just, it's awesome, you know. And then when you do all those things and you practice and you know, put the time and effort in, and then the deer comes into range and you control your nerves and you do the same thing and you execute that shot, it's really, really tough to beat. And to me, my point of that is, like, I want everyone to experience that, because I think that will keep people interested and keep people hunting for a long time. Crossbow, you know, you lose that, you know. You mean, you pick the thing up, you have a scope on it, you have range finding on it, which you can do with a compound too. I understand that. But then it kind of takes away that aspect of it. And then you can go down the whole rabbit hole with, like, well, we need to shoot more deer in Michigan. If we didn't have crossbows, there'd be less people in the woods during archery season, you know, shooting deer and keeping the harvest, you know, harvest rates up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that's something that I get that point, and I do think about that a lot. But for me, it just feels weird, you know. Like, what is the cost of technology in archery? You know, what is... You know, I think Byron said something about, like, what's, you know, killing a big deer, any means necessary, what's the cost of that? You know, we're right there with technology. You know, throw thermals in there, throw thermal drones. I think it's just good, healthy conversation. Like, I have, you know, I have a lot of people that use cell cameras. I use cell cameras. I mean, I use them in a way that I feel like is, you know, ethical for me. Not getting the real-time updates during the season. You know, I've talked about that a little bit. I try to, I don't place 100 of them in one spot. You know, I'm more of a monitoring thing. But I can see the room for abuse. And I think that's the one thing that just, like, someone's got to be talking about it. So we do talk about that a little bit in this episode. Anyways, that's kind of my little quick spiel on that. Cell cameras and crossbows and thermals and all this stuff. It just leaves room for abuse. And unfortunately, guys who are going to abuse the system or, you know, maybe don't follow the rules all the way, when they have this ease of entry and this easier thing to do it, those are the people that abuse it. And okay, I get it. If it's not crossbows, not cell cameras, it'll be something else. Totally on board with that. But I do think that we're approaching a thing that we have to be very conscious of this, especially in Michigan with all this stuff going on. Not killing enough deer and all this DMI stuff. Like, what, you know, we're hearing about these things. It's like, okay, what's this going to look like in the next 10 years? So that's my stance on that. And yeah, just kind of wrapping this intro up, I think it's a great episode with Byron. I really did have fun talking with him. He's a busy guy. He's got his hands in a lot of different things. You know, he does some sweet YouTube videos. He, you know, go give him a follow on that. Follow him on social. And check out the G2 forums. I ordered some. I was hoping to have them in by the time I did this intro, but I didn't quite get on my A game for ordering them right away. But they're on their way. Looking forward to putting some stuff on the wall and seeing those go. I think it's a great thing he's doing, and I'm all for supporting people who are, you know, small-time, kind of getting into the business thing. And it seems like a very, very easy, simplistic, and affordable way to get some antlers on the wall. So check those out. You can go on his Instagram page or Facebook page and find that. But yeah, check those out, G2 Forms. But hey, that's my spiel for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Byron Horn from Whitetail Experience. And don't forget to get out there. All right, welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I have the Whitetail Experience hard-earned bucks, Brian Horton. What's going on, man?
Yeah,
Byron,
man.
Byron, not Brian. Byron, my bad.
That's all right. Yeah, man, excited to be here. We are approaching that date of July 4th, which does seem like that is like all systems launch for whitetails. And yeah, man.
I cannot wait to see some big velvet bucks, like, well, glassing. You know, they're starting to pop. I mean, I got some ready, but I only got a few cameras out just sitting on, like, old food plots or a few stragglers that were just, like, kind of helping with turkey season maybe a little bit. And I'm just, like, itching to get the full fleet out there and start seeing what's going to transpire over this fall. So, yeah, July 4th is kind of like the kickoff for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, and you can, like, really tell, like, by late July what that frame looks like. So yeah, I'm kind of getting a little more excited. I got to get to shooting a little bit. Actually, me and the guys tomorrow, we're going to ruck for like half hour, 45 minutes, and then shoot buzz for a half hour, 45 minutes, like right at like 6 a.m. And it'll be fun. Yeah. A little coffee and a little, ruck and shoot buzz.
So you seem to be a very detailed kind of planned out guy. So you're busy, you do a lot. We'll kind of get into some of the things you do. So you schedule this with your buddies. You're like, dude, we're going to do a workout. We're going to shoot our bows. Like, how far in advance do you have this stuff kind of figured out?
So this literally came out like Tuesday. So Dave, my best friend Dave, and like kind of the second face of Whitetail Experience, if you're familiar with the brand, he does lawn care on the side, and he's got mulch jobs and stuff like that going on sometimes. And obviously you don't want to do that when it's 95, and we all have family. So it's like, honestly, that time slot before the kids get up, we can be halfway done with X, Y, and Z. Or if you go fishing or something in the summer, you do that early and get back. Same thing that applies to the fall too. Like, we do a lot more morning hunts because you left the house at 4 or 3 in the morning and you get back at like maybe 10:30 to noon. You haven't missed like the whole day. If you go for an evening hunt and you take off around noon, it seems like you're gone longer, I feel like, on the family clock.
Especially before the time change, like, you know, those early October night hunts, which are, you know, dynamite if you got the right setup. It's like, man, you're not getting home till like 8:30, maybe 9, depending on how far you got drive. And you know, you might not even see the family from a time, like, you know, so a lot of times I leave in the morning for work, don't see him when I leave. And then I get back and 9 o'clock, little guy's in bed. It's like, man, that's like a bit, you got to really pick and choose those days. So I like time change for my night hunting. Like that mm-hmm. helps because I can, you know, jet early from work and get the hunt in and then be home for dinner kind of a thing. But yeah, that's, I like how you have that approach, like family first and that early morning wake up. Yeah, if you're back by 10, 11, you can maybe make lunch if it's a Saturday or throw the family in the vehicle and go do something still for the afternoon. That's a good take. I like that.
Yeah, if I didn't hunt so far away, you can roll in the door for like 9:30, 10, but like generally, like, you know, I got some commute time. But yeah, we've kind of found that to be the route to go to get in a touch more of those, like, I don't know, I don't want to call them not as valuable hunts, but like October 10th, don't burn the wife out or the family out. That's a November 10th, all yep. gas then.
You got it. All right, so whitetail experience, when did that start? Like, how many years? You've been doing this for a long time. I first saw some of your YouTube videos way back when. That's what I first saw from you. So, and then you had a podcast. You still are on a lot of podcasts. I think you help out with Kevin. Vice versa. Kind of give us a little quick 1-2 punch, I guess, of the whitetail experience.
Yeah. So that started as like, okay, let's be a hunting show and put it on YouTube. And that was 8-9 years ago now. And, you know, I kind of developed some skills as an editor and as a photographer, videographer, and that kind of opened some doors for me. I've worked with, you know, Lone Wolf Custom Gear in the past, XOP, a few other brands, doing just almost like a contractor, to shoot certain things or come up with, assets. I would say I'm probably a little better video editor and producer on that side than necessarily photography. I'm okay at photography. I think I take good buck picks, but like, if you said, what do you do well? I think I make short, quick videos better than average. And that's kind of morphed. We've had a podcast on and off, and I was ready to hang that up recently. And Kevin said, well, why don't we do like a mega series where we fit really well with Kevin? Kevin's a really good friend of mine. And that's kind of how that has morphed. And in 2024, Kevin and I and I submit a few other, we'll call them shed casts. They get a little mm-hmm. loose, but, yeah, Kevin and I kind of teamed up to keep the podcast thing going. And so that's been an awesome add, to what we got going on.
Nice. So now you did do you do video premieres every year? Or I've heard a few of those that you'll say, you know, the Whitetail Experience kind of has like a video you'll launch and have a little watch party. How are you still doing that moving forward? Or how is that whole, part of your life? Where's that transitioned into?
Yeah, I will do another deer and beer night. I love that name, right? Like nothing wrong with that.
yeah.
And I will do another one. I got to shoot another buck. And so that, yeah, I will do another deer and beer launch party. That was pretty cool. I did it on like a Thursday and like 50 people showed up into this, brewery. And knowing that, I think I would combo that event and do it on a Saturday, so maybe a longer range commutes, and we'd probably do it like barbecue style. Like Dave would probably do some cooking. The only negative there is like you got to play the weather game if we're doing it barbecue style, shoot bow. So I haven't. That's a 2025 tackle at this point.
I like it. I mean, that's cool, man. I know you're talking about it in a few of your episodes and stuff, and I was like contemplating going because you're very relatable. Like you're right. You have a full-time job. You got a family. You know, I have probably made my hunting's maybe a little easier because I have a lot of private access that I hunt. I only go on public or state land when I'm out of state kind of stuff here in Michigan. But you know, being an Ohio guy and all that stuff, you know, I still like your approach, even though you probably like the Buckeyes, but you know, other than that, I think, it's cool to see you and the content you guys do because you're just a dude that's out there grinding, you know, the hard earned bucks is live and well. You can listen back to some of your episodes talking about how you guys are scouting, how you're hunting, very like deer camp esque with your friends kind of stuff. So that's really cool seeing that. And I've always enjoyed that. Like in the struggle with trying to find deer in like big country, like you're hunting and then filming it all the time. I was, man, that's a job in itself. And you seem to be pretty, pretty loyal to that camera and you love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I do enjoy the video creation side of things. And as far as like you talk about our brand is relatable, like my brand literally targets myself at age 18, 20 years old. I was sitting there in the college dorm and I would cut out like buck pictures from Field and Stream, put them on my wall. And I had no idea how to find a good racked buck, 130, 140 class bucks were all over my, I had no idea how to do it. And so some of the information that I have put out over the years has been a little more how to do it and be a little bit more realistic and relatable. Like now I am a little more guarded as far as information I put out. I won't even mention states anymore because we've gotten burned by the YouTube world. But yeah, that's kind of, I do target myself at age 18 to 20 and, you know, paint the picture of what we're doing that more is in touch with the everyday guy, which in general, the space is that way a lot more. Like, no offense, hunting outfitted hunts is not cool. And people hid that for years on TV.
Dude, I remember that. I had no idea that's what was going on. Like, as a kid, you were like, dude, that guy's got awesome property. And you're like, how does he shoot so many deer in 1 year? You know, that was kind of thing. And then you started like, I remember the first few times, I want to say it was Realtree, the Milk River. Was that the spot they hunted a lot? Like, I think everyone knows just piles of deer, you know? And they would be like multiple different people would hunt that same area and then come to find out it was just a big outfit that they were just, you know, doing that, which that was kind of like the space, you know? Like, that's how everyone did it until you got your content. And then now I think it started being like, well, that's not very realistic for the normal guy to go to five outfits a year or whatever that may be and pay those big dollars. So then you started seeing guys with the YouTube and social media that were able to get their content out. Like, man, these dudes are smashing deer on, you know, multiple states because they're traveling, they're camping out of their truck. I mean, you can just go through the rabbit hole of that. And that was quite a pivotal point, I think, in the bow hunting community. And like, even though the whitetail, chasing the whitetail, and I, you know, social media and that kind of stuff. But you talking about that, you have some great stances on social media and YouTube and how you like to portray everything. And one of the things you've always said is there's a fine line between making it easier on the hunter. You still want to work for it. And I think I agree with you because I think that's how it stays for generations. If it's too easy, then I think you just is going to fizzle out. So I didn't know what you were kind of like. Is that kind of like your approach? Like, once you're in, like that 20-year-old kid that's been grinding, you know, sitting in the cold, the crappy gear, and then he finally shoots that first deer with his bow, like, dude, he's hooked. Like, it's hooked.
Yeah. I think hunters a lot of times focus on, they want to put nice rack bucks on the wall, and by all means necessary, 100%, that's how the industry is designed. And a lot of people just, honestly, it kind of relates to a game of pickup basketball. You will see 9 out of 10 guys on a pickup game not call like their own travels, or if they foul somebody during a shot. And realistically, if there's a ref there with a whistle, like, they'd be like, oh, you picked up your pivot foot, that was a travel. And the hunting space is kind of like that. Like, there's a little bit of lack, I feel, of respect for the game we're playing, respect for the animal, where it's just like, they want big bucks, they want big bucks. Let's fly a drone over him and set up on him. Like, that's kind of where 2025 hunting is going at this point. And I think we need to realize, like, we're playing this cat and mouse game, and we've all fallen in love with it because there is some mystery about the woods and deer in general. And when we start taking all that away, we got to realize that animals and access to land is a resource that is not infinite. And so when advancements come along that make us more efficient, it's he with the most land wins. And those of us without deeper pocketbooks, you're all going to be on the same piece of public, and the experience is going to lessen. I'm afraid. I'm very scared looking at like my son's generation that could want to hunt, that deer shit on the ground ain't gonna mean anything because you're running 75 cell cams and you're getting a drone report emailed twice a week where they've already algorithmed out that if you sit in this like 30 by 50 area, you got a 62% to kill that night, whether it be does or bucks or whatever. But it's just like, yeah, deer shit on the ground didn't mean anything. And I'm scared that's what.
Yeah, like deer woodsmanship is like, I would say, like, I've had a lot of really good success the last few years, I would think, for at least in my eyes, really, you know, challenging myself and trying to shoot more mature deer, et cetera, however that wants to be. And, you know, that could coin right in, like, I have cell cameras, you know, like, you have a good stance on cell cameras. And that's one of those things, like, do I think have I had more success because of cell cameras? Yes. But have I used it in a way that I feel like, would I have still shot some of these yellow cell camera? I don't know. how do you know? Because I've been having cell cameras, and then, you know, I still make sure that I put them in great spots. And like, personally, I have certain limitations. Like, I only get a picture every, you know, twice a day or three times a day, every 6 hours or something. I try really hard not to be like instant stuff. And I had 1 year, this was a handful of years ago. One of the first years I had a cell camera, I had it out in a plot, and it was behind my house. So local to me, just a spot that, you know, a lot of does, nothing really big, but I got a picture of a doe out there during late gun season, and I was like, man, I could just go out there and shoot that thing a second, because I could sneak right through the woods, shoot that deer, and it felt dirty, you know, like, and I was like, I'm not doing it. I can't do it. So if I've had that opportunity, how many more opportunities are out there that guys who are, you know, being a little more creative or setting up differently? It's just this whole can of worms that feels weird to me. And then I had my first experience with thermals when I went on a pig hunt in Oklahoma, and whoa, those things are awesome. Like a thermal on your gun, what you can see at night blows my mind. I'm just like, all right, what if I have one of these? You could literally get on your property and scan with a thermal, and you can see deer in the woods. And like, how many guys are using thermal to that advantage? Like, I don't know. There's all these things, and then you throw the drones in there, and you see, we all see the videos of guys tracking deer, and they're going into a cornfield. It's like they fly the drone down, and it's like, nope, that's not my buck. But you can just see this rack. It's like, dude, like, now they know exactly where that deer is for a play. So it's all these opportunities for abuse. And I think that's, you're coming in there, and like the stance you're having is like, there's opportunity for abuse. Like, we got to make sure that we don't react to something when it's too late, or that. Hey, it's kind of a hard thing.
What was the last advancement to come into bow hunting that forever shifted the sport?
The last crossbows. Yes, I was gonna say crossbows.
Okay. I believe the cell cam and drone is the next thing. That should we not exercise caution? Because look at what we've kind of learned from crossbows.
Yeah, because isn't the statistics crazy with how many more people are using a crossbow versus using a compound? Like in all the states, it's insane.
Yeah. And something doesn't feel right about a cell cam, a corn pile, and a crossbow being considered bow hunting. Yes. Like, and you talked about also, like, you can't sometimes equate a cell cam to success or not success. Dude, you're not putting boots on the ground on your properties you're hunting. Mm-hmm. They're steering the truck in the way you're going to hunt based on the information. Like, you can't tell me that's not a huge
100%
significant
100% early October. Guess where I'm hunting? Wherever got the most recent trail cam picture. That could be a cell cam pick. That could be a SD card, or that could be me seeing a truck cross the road. Like, whatever the most recent good information is where I'm steering the truck, like you said. And yeah. Then the fine line comes between, like, okay, we, like Michigan, for example, we don't shoot enough deer. Like, that's what we've been getting told. Like, there's too many does, there's too many deer. We need more hunters, and we need to kill more deer. Okay, cool. So the introduction of, you know, crossbows and this stuff, okay, we're killing more deer. Yes. But are we, like, how many more deer what's the end goal, right? Like, what keeps the population? What lets my kid be able to have great hunting for his whole life? Is it having as many people having cell cameras as possible, bait piles and crossbows, or like, I don't know. Like, at the end of the day, it's like your name. What's the experience you want? You know, what do you want out of your hunting season? But man, crossbows and stuff, they're an easy thing to target, but it's a whole other animal, right?
When barrier to entry starts to like be easier, the quality of individual in there generally drops.
Yes.
Just look at hunting forums in the 90s, early 2000s. When you had to go sit down on a computer, create a username, log in, the quality of post and the less like bad eggs in those groups, you know, because it required effort and time, and wasn't everybody and their brother had a phone like they do today. The quality of the old hunting forums is so much better than what the Facebook groups are. Don't get me wrong, some Facebook groups are phenomenal. But yeah,
it's a good point. You're so right, because if you have an ease of access or anything easier, cheating, who bad eggs cheat, you know, like the people who have that same kind of a thing. And it kind of stinks that, you know, in the space of hunting, you wish everyone had the correct moral compass. I wish more people in day-to-day life had a good moral compass, but just
it's not the grocery cart test is real. Go to
Yep, it is, dude. That's and it, so like, how are you navigating all this stuff with your kid that you're raising in the space? Because how old's your oldest right now?
My oldest is 4.
Oh, you're getting close.
Dude, we just slayed 3 bluegills about the size of my hand last night. As far as we threw 25 waxworms, though. We did a lot of casting where we lose the worm because he's just whipping it like 90 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, dude, I love it. So my guy's 8. So you're like, you're approaching that time, man, with that. And how are you raising a kid in a way nowadays that he hopefully gets tore up with being an outdoorsman like yourself?
Oh yeah. I mean, I never push it. But like we go do things. Like we got chickens here, so we set a live trap for raccoons, you know, and I let him pick the spot. Where are we putting the trap at tonight, bud? We go in the back and we look for deer tracks in the muddier spot of our woodlot right there. The fishing thing's been fun. That used to be more of a rock throwing game where we just go to the pond and creeks and throw 5,000 rocks a night, but we fish a little more now. But he knows. He told me the other night, "Dad, you going to get a buck?" So I'm going to try. And he goes, "And then you're going to turn it to a cheeseburger?" Like, oh, so he gets it.
Yes.
You know, my wife and I got chickens 18 months ago or something. And part of like the thing where I was like looking at the price of the coop and the birds and the feed, I'm like, I don't know if this math is going to work out, but I was like, if my son knows where breakfast comes from, I'm in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just stuff like get them outside. Kids are kids, man. They figure it out. You start going outside, they become a little like native of the woods, man. They'll pick up sticks and use them as spears. And they've never seen anybody throw an atlatl or you know, they're just kids, man.
Love it. Yeah. That's the same approach I've had with my kid. Like, hey dude, we're going to go get ice cream and we're going to go look for bucks with binoculars. And you know how many times we went to spots and I knew good and well, we probably weren't going to see any deer, but he was going to run around like a freaking wild Indian and try to look through the binoculars with one eye and just, you know, we're eating ice cream at the truck kind of stuff. I mean, you know, every time a trail camera, you know, journey had to happen, dude, let's go check trail cameras or go set camera. And then just, there was a point in time where they're little, you kind of have to like make them go with you. Cause like, hey, this is what dad's doing. And then now he's at the point in his life where it's like, hey dude, do you want to go do this? Or do you want to stay back? Or what do you want to do? And some days he doesn't have any desire to go with me. Well, that isn't going to be very fun. And then there's other days where he think we're going to see anything today? And I had to be like, honest with him. Like, hey, I don't know, man. Like we're sitting in a spot and maybe not. And then he's like, kind of cherry picks when he wants to go with me, which is fun because he's learning, you know, like time, it's too hot today, dad, we're not gonna see anything. Like, so but he does have the desire to be out there and just letting a kid be a kid. And gosh, the amount of times he has, you know, went somewhere and he loves finding buck tracks now. Like, man, he I don't have to like provoke him, we're just walking anywhere and he'll put his hand down, he's like, oh dad, look at that, that's bigger than my hand, and just like cool things like that, which is exactly what I, you know, how I grew up. Same thing, like tagging along with my uncle or my grandpa doing that, and I love it. And you know, then there comes a point in time where like last year he shot a deer, and at, you know, 7 years old, and it was, I didn't shoot my first deer until I was, you know, 14 with a gun because I couldn't gun hunt until I was 14. And then he goes out there and he could have shot one at any age I felt necessary. So I mean, 4 years old, 5 years old, he could have shot one, but I kind of waited for him to tell me when. But like I compare him shooting a deer at 7 compared to me at 14, like have to have the sweet, you know, tripod for the gun to sit on because he's not big enough to hold the gun up, you know. But you know, I didn't do the final rest or anything like that, just a tripod with a bog death grip. And I really struggled with it because I was like, man, like there's no way he can like hold this gun and get it off the, you know, lean in the, we use a lot of gun blinds for, you know, deer hunting or gun season. So I had to have it set up for him, but I told myself I'm not going to line the gun up for him. Like he's going to find the deer in the scope. And let me tell you what, there was probably 4 or 5 deer that he did not shoot because he could not get the scope on the deer. And as a dad, I was like, I want nothing more but to just like line the deer up in the scope for him and let him shoot, you know. But I was like, nope, sticking to my guns and he's got to figure this out and face some adversity. And he ended up sealing the deal around Thanksgiving. And
yeah, it's cool. And he's still tore up with it. Like, he's like, yeah, I can't wait to go. So I feel like I'm doing good, but he's so young. It's just like, man, it's a tough thing to navigate in this,
I feel like, age. The perfect deer hunt for like a new person is just see deer, but like maybe like not capitalized, whether they're out of range or the encounter happens too fast. Just so they know, like, oh yeah, we saw deer, and like I felt the adrenaline rush of seeing the animal I'm after, but like didn't get the success. Like, I think that's like the perfect draw it up deer hunt. My brother-in-law has never hunted, would probably never get in the woods. He's not that kind of guy, but he expressed some interest, and I set him up on a small piece, and he missed night one, but saw like two deer. And actually, he made the choice because a spiker buck and a small doe came in first. And I talked to him ahead of time. I'm like, look, dude, if you got a buck behind a doe, you're going to have to make the call of holding off or taking the for sure thing. Because I was like, that buck is a little more cagey most of the time, just looking around solo animal. And sure enough, he rolled the dice where the doe is in the shooting lane. and the spiker is, I don't know, 35 yards out. And the spiker comes in and busts us.
Man, so that's good stuff though. That's, yeah, I mean, you fail so much more than you succeed hunting, like you just do. And that's cool with that. So I just popped my brain. We have some of these technical things like technology and stuff. Have you thought of any way to like combat that? Cause like, you know, there's states that are like saying no more trail cameras on public land. I think Iowa is the newest state to do that. Yeah. Where are we kind of stand with that? Like, you have states that have crossbows, and like, I agree with you. I think a lot of people would agree, like, crossbow hunting is completely different than vertical bow hunting. Like, how do we combat this kind of a thing? Like, you know, drones, you know, we have, I think Michigan is like one of those, it's the only states you're not allowed to use a drone to recover deer. So they have like some, but it's like some really gray areas in there. Like, we're in like Michigan right now, we're dealing with this huge thing with like coyote hunting used to be all year round.
Right. Yeah.
They stopped it for 3 months. So it was like not sound information, or there was no scientific reason. It was more of like perception kind of a thing. So like that, as I'm getting older, I'm trying to like understand how to like combat some of this stuff and what it actually is going to take to like have change. And I don't, I guess maybe for you, have you maybe digged into that stuff a little more?
Yeah, I actually have a little bit. Two things though. One, Iowa did retract on the verbiage around the trail cams. Okay. I think they're gonna allow them on public. I don't know, cell cam, no cell cam. But yeah, that did come out where they're like, we're gonna do better. Where they put out a retracted type statement around that. And I think Kentucky did the same thing where they were going to outlaw cell cams on public, and then everybody wasn't so sure about that, and they retracted as well. I think these conversations, just like the one we're having, are happening more, and they're a little more public. And the states obviously are terrible to adjust their laws and game laws to keep up with technology, but it's becoming an issue. And people like, I don't know, myself, I would look at a guy like Skip Sly, who's very dialed in on what's going on in Iowa and is an activist essentially for hunting rights and regulations. Like, he kind of formed a group to kind of shoot down some of the crossbow stuff. But I think, yeah, these healthy conversations, I personally have spoke with or sent thoughts, or sometimes I'll grab a screenshot of something and send it in where I'm like, just so you guys are aware, this is happening, and I'm persistent. And there's a couple other people doing the same thing. So yeah, just being active and voicing it is something I've done. I also, you know, am a member of Pope and Young, and not many people are. And Pope and Young does some things as far as working with regulations on kind of some of the fair chase aspects and. Yeah, that's an organization I believe in with what their philosophies are.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because they have like, what was it, nocturnals or late knocks? They had a stance on that for a long time. Like, you don't want to use any lighted things. I think they have certain things with let offs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's a organization that's been around for a long time for that. I just, man, I think of the crossbow here to stay. That's one of the things I don't like. I do like it for certain aspects. Like, okay, my grandpa, he's 83 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he hunts with a rifle during rifle season. I would love for him the last years of his days on earth to be able to hunt as many times as he wants, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he's always had the stance of, you Indians throwing sticks at deer and wounding them all the time. I'll just shoot them my 30-06, you know, kind of, that's even his stance. But I would love for him to be able to, you know, hunt with a crossbow and do those kind of things. And that you can extend that to a lot of other people who are, you know, elderly and, you know, aren't pulling a bow back. So when they are going to go out there, you want them to be as effective as you can be. And then, you know, the other flip side for like, oh, it's good for kids to use. Well, to me, I don't really care that it's that easy for a kid. Like Henry could easily have used a crossbow for the last few years and he's got no desire because, you know what he sees dad use? He sees dad use a compound and a recurve. So like that's cool to him. Like I'll shoot it with that, you know, and he probably hears me and my dad kind of say stuff about crossbows. But then you got people who have like, you know, medical reasons and they should still be able to go. Like that's the thing. Like, sure. It's always like we're always appeasing to how I want to say this in a way that's not like super mean, but we try to make life easier for the weak and the meeble, right? Yeah. Like we do that in all aspects of life. We need to be, you know, it's easier to do this. Let everyone have a chance. Well, you know what? Sometimes the strongest or the strongest of us can do it. Like, cool. If you can't shoot a bow that's heavy enough weight, maybe put some time and effort into working out a little bit or try to build your strength up to do that. And then, you know, my shoulder's screwed up. Like it's just a matter of time before I'm going to have surgery on my shoulder and I'm going to do everything I can to do that. So it's not during deer season, you know, so I can recover, but it might be one of those things where it's like, maybe I won't even, if I can't pull back a bow, I'll use a crossbow. Nah, no, I won't use a crossbow. Cause to me, that's not archery. That's just how I was raised and how I think about it. So it's like such just like two sides pounding to each other. And, you know, then you get, oh, we just all need to get along. We all, you know, we're all licensed tag people. We're helping it out. We need to, man, dude, it's something in my soul just doesn't like it. I don't know what to do.
Dude. I'm going to make a quick point and we can come back. Remind me to come back to the, we need to stick as many, thought, but, the crossbow thing's kind of funny and yeah, like a crossbow now is not what it was, rewind 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
The fact that these things are now shooting better than 30-30 iron sights, like, wait a minute, that is, you know, we need to look at the advancements. that's the biggest thing is these states need to be looking at what's coming into the sport. And I think we're also at a decision. Do we want to mirror the European type-ish model and just go floodgates are open and this is going to be potentially a sport for the privileged? Or are we going to keep it primitive in nature, right? Like tap into those caveman roots that we all kind of probably have. I think we are on kind of a decision of, you know, just like with like NASCAR and golf and some of these other things like football with stick 'em. Like sometimes you get to a technology aspect and you need to say no, because that changes the core of hunting or the stick 'em with football changes the core role of the receiver. All of a sudden soft hands and the ability to time a catch didn't matter because you had this spray that went on your hand and you just stuck it out there. Right. The core fundamentals of receivers is those are naturally guys that are fast and generally have a good set of hands. Like you gotta be able to catch the football.
Yeah.
And that piece of technology said, no, you can just be really tall and fast and jump high. We don't care about core of what used to be, but as far as we got to cater to the many and don't bash a guy for doing X, Y, and Z. I'm like, I don't know, because if you told me you shot even par and I found out you played the ladies tees, we need to have a conversation, bud. You ain't playing golf.
Yep.
You know, like,
or, oh, you know, yeah, that one, I hit out of bounds. I'll just hit another one and not count it, you know, or like, oh, hey, this one's kind of a bad spot. I'll kick it around that tree, but we're not counting it. Like, yeah, then you're not a par golfer. You're not.
Yeah.
So soccer just came to my mind. So I coached soccer for the first time. I've never played soccer, played sports growing up, but soccer was just never the thing I did. My wife had played some soccer. Well, my kid wanted, I'm like, you're playing a sport. Like you're eight. Like we're doing it. You pick one or I'll pick one for you. And we kind of recommend soccer because his cousins kind of played and we got a little local place that they can go play in. Well, they're short on coaches. So I coached, loved it. It was so much fun. And, But then we were having dinner this week, and Henry was like, hey, Dad, you know, if I practice every day and I tried really hard and like, could I become one of the best soccer players? And I looked at him and said, no, dude, you can become the best soccer player that you could be by working really hard. But he's like, I'm gonna be Ronaldo or Messi. And I laughed and I said, because all the kids, you know, they always have those jerseys on when you see them. They always talk about, oh, Messi does this when we're at practice. And my wife is like, she played soccer. She's like, I don't even know who those people are. And I was like, well, they're really good soccer players. And she's like, you know, it's like soccer used to not even be a thing, you know, 15 years ago. And now look where soccer is right now. Like, it's super popular, a lot more popular than what it had been. But why is that? Because guess what? Soccer is soccer. What are you going to do? Make the ball better, or make, like you just said, you have to be a really good athlete. It's not easy. It's hard. There's gray and white areas, right? Football, you can do all these, new helmet to keep people from getting concussed, or different kind of pads to make them faster. And then baseball, you can juice the balls or juice the bats, doing all this stuff that we've had over. Guess what? Soccer still is same sport it was 15 years ago. So I think you got something to say with that. Like, that's gaining popularity. Maybe that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I think some of the core sports have tweaked it and tweaked back the other way. There's a reason you don't have aluminum bats in the MLBs. And so, yeah, I think a lot of sports do a good job of I don't know. If you were good at baseball or soccer or football in a given area, sometimes it still translates even years later. Sometimes it doesn't. There is a little difference to, mm-hmm. especially like the NBA now, but. But yeah, I'm with you. I think we're joking ourselves if we think we're better hunters than the dudes who figured it out pre-trail cams. Those guys were some woodsmen.
Dude. And they did it like with even like recurves or compounds. Like, yeah. I pulled back the compound I first shot my first deer with was my dad's PSE. It's like a number. I can't remember what it was. Like, no let off. Cams are like the size of like a bottle, beer can, you know, like tiny. And busted that thing out this spring. And I was like, oh yeah, this is the one I used. And I pulled that thing back and I was like, how did I kill deer with this? Like, you know, like, it felt like it was just like, it was like just janky, it felt like. And I shot a few deer with that. And at the time, that bow was bad to the bone, you know, and that really wasn't that long ago. And now I have, you know, a carbon bow and all these doodads and, you know, this super expense, like that. If the amount of money I spent on that bow, if I would have told myself 10 years ago that I was going to spend that much money on a bow, I would have been like, you're out of your mind. And that's just the way we're going with things. And checking yourself and balancing is like important and healthy, and doesn't always make it, it might hurt some feelings, but you know what, at the end of the day, we're men. We should be able to handle it. We're hunters. Your feelings are going to get hurt because you're going to fail in the woods. Like, you're going to get blown at by a deer. You're going to miss a deer. You're going to wound a deer. You're going to face all this adversity. So if you can't take someone having a different stance than you on equipment and technology, just grow up, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so
I like it.
I do want to talk to you about a few things because you kind of have like a recurve traditional kind of journey you've been working on. I have my own journey that I have, you know, kind of I grew up shooting, you know, like every other kid shooting a recurve, little red Fred Bear looking bow. And then I shot compound with fingers and no sight, or then I went to one sight and then I finally got a release when I was older. So my dad grew up shooting instinctive. So I shot a lot of instinctive too. Made a couple times. I've only just hunted with a recurve for the whole year when I was younger. I ended up shooting a deer, wounding it. Just did a piss poor job of following up on my shot because I was just inexperienced, and I convinced myself it went away. It didn't. Killed the deer. Just took me 2 weeks to find it. And then since then, I haven't really picked up the recurve to hunt with because it kind of tore me up a little bit. And now fast forward, you know, 8 years, 9 years, whatever it's been, I'm starting to get the itch really bad to take it out and like seal the deal. I kind of want to like come full circle and like get my first nice deer with a recurve. So then the dilemma I have is, I think you've talked about like having like a sliding scale for like what your goal is for the year. I'm struggling because I feel like my goal is like stays the same. Doesn't matter if I'm hunting Michigan private, Michigan public, if I have a gun in my hands, if I have a bow in my hands, if I'm in Illinois, if I'm in Iowa, like I'm just like, my goal is my goal. And now this recurve journey, it's like, hey, would I be okay to like shoot a 2.5-year-old buck? And I'm like, nah, I don't think so. So I kind of want to pick your brain where you're at with a compound versus a recurve or traditional bow, because you're going to state that you can only shoot one buck. Like, you have one buck tag. I have two. So I kind of want to pick your brain on that a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, man. It sounds like identical thoughts. Like, I had the stick bow in hand late season last year, and I had like a four pointer come in. I couldn't do it. And I had a muzzleloader hunt where I had like a 2.5 year old, but he had like a double spike on one side and like a regular, like, I don't know if he would have been matched up like a 90-ish inch buck, but he had like a double spike on one side. And like, if I'd had a stick bow then, I might have, but I don't know. I clearly didn't shoot him with the muzzleloader, but I don't have a good answer. And Dave and I talk about this all the time. Like, you know, if you pick up the stick, do you, your inches? Yeah, bud. I gotta be on this call, okay? Joe did go back to sleep. My daughter went back to sleep, guys.
Yay!
It's nap time. So yeah, like Dave and I had this talk all the time. Like, I do think I probably have like some sort of 10 to 15 inch swing, where if I'm sitting there, for example, on, I have some property that doesn't have the 140 crowd on a regular basis, but it has a lot of like 120 class bucks. That doesn't exactly pump my heart with a compound in hand. Even a 3.5, 4.5 year old out there doesn't seem to be necessarily like 140 plus. It's a lot of the 128 points. Dude, if I have a recurve in my hand, like, I'm shooting, like, and I'm jacked. I think it all, I'm with you. There is some sort of metric. Sometimes I don't want to adjust my standards too much, but there's definitely some adjustment there. And I'll say this, dude, he can be like 70 inches. If he's like 18, 20 wide, I'm shooting him. I love wide bucks.
That's your Achilles heel right there, wide buck.
He can have like 4-inch twos and threes. If he's like starting to get like 18 wide, like, I'm sending it.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Because that's the – I kind of been dealing with that a little bit because I've – you know, I got some – you know, state land around my area, and I do a lot of small game hunting on it. So I've scouted a lot. I've had trail cameras for multiple years, and I do get some like really nice, you know, Michigan bucks on those cameras. But they're just not to the level that I like. I'm really like, I'm kind of at the point where I'm trying to target like 4.5 year old and up deer, just because it's just climb the ladder kind of a thing. Not because I think I'm crazy good or I'm the next whatever. It's just like, that's my challenge, and I know there exists, like, those are the deer I target. So on these other areas, I've had a lot of really nice 3.5 year old deer, and I just can't quite bring myself to hunt them. You know, like, I have yet to shoot a buck on state land, and a lot of guys like to hang their head, oh, it's a public land buck, so it's not as big as it can be. Like, granted, you got to hunt the deer that are in your area, but I just don't want to fall into that, like, almost like settle. Cause I feel like at this point in time, if I purposely shoot a deer that's 3.5 years old and like, know it is like going into it, like, I cheated myself. So now I'll pick up recurve, and here I am, and I have an opportunity to maybe make, cause sometimes not all deer are the same easiness to kill. Like, sometimes the biggest deer in camera is one of those ones that you just know you're wasting time, or you don't feel confident to hunt it, so you might hunt another deer.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do when I know that I have a pretty good bead on a 3 year old, or I sit up on that spot, you know, in October and on a scrape, and here comes this 3.5 year old buck that I know is 3.5, like, no doubt. So where am I going to be? What am I going to do? Am I going to like succumb to that? Or is my adrenaline and buck fever going to just completely overpower that? Like, that's just my headspace. Cause that's my headspace now, because we know it's June and almost July. So it's about all I got to think about.
I don't know that. That is a good thought. I do have a question for you on the stick bow game.
Yes.
But like, if I'm scroll, like, if I just like, you texted me a picture and you roasted a racked buck with a stick bow, dude, you could be behind probably like a 150 with a compound. If he's like just a racked buck with a stick, like, I'm kind of equal respect at some level. Like, a lot, it's just, there's some sort of metric there. But like, yeah, I that's an interesting thought. So my dilemma with the stick, Dave and I were talking about it. Generally, I looked at last season and I wanted to shoot a doe with that stick bow just to kill something. I've killed a few groundhogs. But a doe, and I looked at my season and I said, man, the week of November, I had so many doe encounters inside of like 7 yards that it was stupid. And I had no doe encounters but one that were like, I can recall that were like stick bow range, like 10, 12 yards. And that night it was raining and I took the compound and I was able to capitalize. But it was one of those things that, geez, like I look at my encounters, even in November when it's not a great idea to shoot does, but like that's with the stick bow, I feel like there's some part of the equation where the deer, let's just call it the woods decides it's time for that thing to die.
I think that's what's going to have to be, right? Like I don't know how else to do it because like, first of all, I think of all the deer have killed a compound, like majority of them are that like 17 to 31 yard range. And I think actually the most of them have been sub 25. If I start counting my head, does seem to be a little, if I shoot a doe, it always seems to be a little farther than a buck just because probably how I'm setting up, you know, when I'm doe hunting, I'm like, give me as many opportunities as I can or field edge. But when I'm buck hunting, I'm like right in the thick of things. So I like think of all these deer I've killed. And it's like, man, the last few, if I haven't recurved my hands, I probably would have sent one. Now, if it connected, whatever, who knows?
So yeah. And the whole, like, you can't draw early.
Yes. Yes.
That's one of the things that I feel like I struggled with this year is like, yeah, you can't draw at 25 when he's behind the tree and then he steps into like 20.
Mm-hmm.
I had two encounters at 25 yards with a stick bow in my hand, and one of those was a full velvet buck.
Ooh, that would have been sweet. First one, velvet. Ooh. Yeah. So I screwed the buck I told you about that I messed up on. I hit him back, full on liver shot. Kind of last two ribs went in, kind of a thing. I believe it still haunts me. Eating acorns early October, warm out, and I pulled my bow back and I just held it at full draw. And then my whole instinctive, because I shoot instinctive, so like a whole process just got shambled. So then I let down, and then it like he was kind of walked a little closer, and then there's a few saplings, and I did the same thing, pulled back, and then he kind of turned funny. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to wait. And I waited, then shot. And I shot like, it was a 12-yard shot. I shot like 8 inches too far over. And I know it was because I broke down my system, you know, of what you just said. That is the one thing about recurves that when instinctive shooting for me, I got to pull back and let it rip. And how do you do that when you got a buck that's, you know, nudging some does coming through the area? You try to stop them. Like, yeah, it's a whole nother game. And I'm going to have to try this year now. Like, I just like talking about it. Me and my dad, we can both hunt the same property, and we told each other this year we're only hunting that property with a recurve in our hands during bow season. So that makes it a little easier too. Like that's the hard line. Like if I'm going to bow hunt that spot, that recurve is in my hand. So that's pretty cool to do that. But do you think it'll happen this year? You think you'll get one or what?
I need to go all in is what I need to do instead of twinkle toes around. I don't know, man. I think I'll be able to pull off like at least a doe with it. My confidence in that 15 to 20 yard range now is so much better, having just shot that thing for over a year now. I'm still probably like 17, 18 yards is probably the max I would want to release that first arrow. I was flinging some 40 yarders the other day just to see if I could hit foam at the range. And one of those ended up like ricocheting off the top of the target and into the abyss.
It's fun, dude. But So what is your setup? Are you longbow or are you recurve, or what do you have?
I got a recurve by Stryker, an Ohio company. It's kind of cool. And it's actually the riser is the same grip in like area that my old favorite compound was, New Breed Archery, which is no longer around. Kyle Knoll, the inventor or founder of that company, made a recurve with a compound grip, essentially. So it's pretty skinny. It's got the rubbers on the side. It's just so familiar to my hand because I shot that New Breed blade for like 3 years. I still got that blade as my backup bow just in the closet behind me. And so, that bow is cool. And I paid a little bit extra money to get like the tan with the carbon limbs because I think it looks sweet.
That's nice. Now, what are you doing for? Are you instinctive? Are you three under? What do you?
Yeah, like, three under instinctive. I've tried to aim a few arrows, and it just doesn't go well for me. Like where I stare down the shaft, and I think I anchor lower, which may not bode well for. I see a lot of the guys that anchor a touch like above the lip. I'm like fingertip goes in here, almost a fingertip goes to like my low lip.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I'm a one over, two under, that fletching right here. And that fletching's like in my cheek or on my lip, you know, right there. That's how I've always shot. And I can, it's funny because when I shoot a lot, I almost shoot better at long range than I do at short range, like over 30 yards. And I think it's mental, like always, like, you know, when you're staring at that target at 30 yards plus with your recurve, you're like, dude, I have to be honed in here. Like, I have to just shoot, pick my spot really well. And then that target's at like 12 yards. You're like, dude, I could whip my bow at this thing, you know? And I do actually struggle a little bit at closer range. And that, who knows? I'm sure there's guys that are more into traditional archery that could probably dissect that a little farther. But yeah, I love that. I love that the journey of that. And my bow is sitting right here on the wall. And I see that every time I come down here. And I'm like, that is, yeah, it's very front and center. But I'm doing 3D League right now. First time I've ever done that. I kind of told myself once that's done, that bow is going to, my compound will sit to the side for a little bit. And I'm really going to start flinging arrows with that again. And yeah, hopefully be ready for the season for that. And then, okay, let's transition a little bit into some gear because are you a gear nut?
Moderately. I'm more into hunting and scouting than necessarily gear. Now, if something breaks, oh, I'm swearing it up and down. And yeah, like I definitely, do some tinkering, but I'm like 3 out of 10 on the tinker scale.
Okay.
I was an early adapter to some of the mobile hunting things that make mobile hunting easier, like aiders. I was quick to adapt.
That's what I thought, because that's why I asked you that, because you were, some of the videos you put on your YouTube was like, you were like the first few videos of that stuff. So I didn't know if you were the guy that's got like, you have like just a room full of mobile hunting gear, or are you pretty much like, I like this, so I'm going to run this until it does me wrong. Or do you have just a room full of stuff, like multiple different things?
No, I don't have a room of like this kind of, like I've got a few sticks just in general. But like, I don't have multiple systems. I do saddle hunt 20 to 30% of the time in a given season. If I was cameraman, I would go 100% of the time. I think that's a thing there, but no, I kind of find what I like. And even like a backpack, that's a gear item where I'm never fully happy. I have a Kuyu frame bag that it's like a 6 out of 10 as a whitetail bag. Yeah. It's a decent scouting bag, but yeah, as a true hunting bag, I would change a few things on it. The XOP Striker Evolution bag has great organization pockets for like a whitetail rut bag, but it's not a frame bag. So you can't, there's some weaknesses there. And then if it was super small, it might be real sweet to hunt with. But like I've used that version of that bag for my rut hunts once I start taking more things for years. So yeah, like I'm not a super big gear guy, but I do have a few things I like.
Yeah, and you put it through the paces, you know, too. I feel like everything you do give it like a fair shakedown. You're like, I've heard you talk, I've hunted with this, you know, all early season. And I kind of like how you have like certain things like, oh, if I'm run hunting, I got this. I'm like one backpack, and I use that from October 1st to January 1st, kind of a guy. Like I use the same set of sticks I've been using for years, love them. That's, you know, I got a new hang on tree stand for last year for mobile hunting. And then I have, I've been running the same saddle platform forever, and I'm thinking about diving into a different one because, you know, some companies have some deals and, you know, get a deal because I want to try something different just because it's like I've been using this thing for so long and I wonder if there's something better. Kind of that's where I'm at. Like, is there something I could tweak that makes it a little better? But so like, what is your go-to like tree stand you like to use for like, because you do, I mean, you're a hang and hunt kind of a guy. So what do you like? You said 20%, 30% your saddle. What do you, if you're going to go hang in a tree, what are you using for a stand?
Yeah, early season, I generally go Comanche mode, which I did last year, which I loved, which was just the Cold World tree stand. So I'm going to call that like a medium sized stand with two sticks with double eighters on both those and a small bag. And that's because scouting is a little bit more important than necessarily hunting that time of year. And the Cold World, I will say this, is nice. If you're going to sit in the dark for like an hour or 45 minutes or something, like having the little bit bigger platform, super nice. Now that system may change for the rut just because you're out there long hours and lots of like the temperature range is so much different. I generally bring a lot more water and food for those hunts. But, and then I do morph a little bit for late season because if I'm hunting big timber, I tend to hybrid hunt more because I hide on the backside of the trees because there's no cover in the leaves. And if there is cover, it's really high and I don't want to get super high because that just makes for a really long and kind of pain in the ass mobile hunt.
Cool. All right, we're gonna transition here into some food topics because you have this take on pizza, and every time I hear you, okay, what's your favorite pizza you buy from the store and throw in the oven?
Oh, so yes, we are known for on the White Tail Expansion, we used to break down frozen pizzas.
Yes, so I need to know what your favorite one is.
Right now, I think the best like value to performance level has got to be the Screaming Sicilian.
Okay,
you can find them on sale for like $6.38 to $7.50, and yeah, the toppings are a little better, the crust crisps up a little better. That seems to be my favorite frozen pizza, and this stems from the White Tail Experience podcast days where
yes,
we were breaking it down, and Dave will get a little fancy. He'll get some additional toppings and like chop up some onion and peppers and put it on his frozen pizza to take it to the next level. But he's like a Tony's or a very cheap frozen pizza. And I'm like, those are terrible crusts. And DiGiorno's way overhyped.
Yes, DiGiorno. So, okay. So I'm going to come in. Every time I heard this on your podcast, I scream, just go get a Little Caesars pizza. Just buy a hot and ready and be done with it. Like, that's my take, because it's like, what, $5.50 or $6? It's hot. You don't have to cook it, ready to rip. You can eat a slice on the way home if you're really hungry. You don't have to wait for it. So, like, that, every time you guys said this debates what you want, I'm like, Little Caesars, Little Caesars, Little Caesars. So what is your take on that kind of a pizza?
So the problem with your pitch here is frozen pizzas generally are consumed on a Saturday night after a few beverages, and driving is not an option.
Yes, true. Generally, like, solid.
Yes, solid. There is nothing I like more, like in that July to August time frame, you're tinkering with the gear, like you're putting silencing tape on, or you're touching up your pack, and you're just drinking a beer in the garage. The kids have gone down. This is your like tinker zone time.
Mm.
That is something I love to do. And the garage door's open. Maybe you got a TV in the corner going. That is, and then you're like, you know what, I'm going for a slice of pizza.
The garage fridge is packed full of beer, and you might have been opening a couple. I'm feeling it. Yeah. Okay.
Now, I don't go garage fridge. I like a cooler with ice and water, right? I want those puppies submerged so they are ice cold. If we're going to break this down to how I do my summer beers, I don't do a garage fridge. I got those things in a better cooler with literally like the ice water mixture.
So like that morning you wake up, you're like just sipping your coffee. You're like, you know what I have to do today? I have to mow the grass. So before I start mowing, I'm going to town, grabbing a bag of ice, grabbing a 6-pack or grabbing a 12-pack or whatever you got, throw in the cooler, drink one when you're mowing, and then all your stuff's done for the day and you sip on the rest. So this is a drawn out thing. If you have a garage cooler full of ice with beer in it, you've pre-planned. This is premeditated.
There's a couple steps here if we're gonna break this down.
Yeah, so we need to know this. Yes.
Okay, so you can't be spending too much money on ice. So what you got to do is you got to freeze a couple bigger water bottles in, because most hunters have a deep freeze, right? That's the nature of our sport, and those allow you to get a lot of what they call the bigger blocks of ice, which have a higher specific heat energy, which is the amount of energy to melt. Little ice cubes melt very fast, like a snow cone, like a slushy. Those melt, but a big chunk of ice takes forever to melt. So that is your core foundation to getting the cooler to the temp. So around noon, you put a few of those frozen water bottles in there. So Saturday, we're going to ruck. We're going to shoot bows. Then we're hanging with the kids and doing the family thing. And around noon to 1 o'clock, you need to prep your cooler. So you're going to put a couple frozen water bottles in there with assorted beverages. I like some lime beers in the summer. I think I got some Coronas up there. And then about 4 to 6 o'clock, whenever you get your window where the house isn't crazy, then you add your ice from your ice like refrigerator, to cover that bad boy up. The ideal is you got a little bit of water in there already, so you get the slushy effect, a fully encompassed can of ice cold goodness. And that's how you prep. And then once the kids go down, or maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock, the beers are ready.
And you're like, so 8 o'clock, first beer. Psh, that's when it starts. 8 o'clock. I like it.
it all depends on how the kids are curving towards bedtime and what that looks like. Cause that dictates.
So what kind of a cooler are we talking here? Do you have like a nice hard sided 70 core big boy, or you got like a little smaller cooler for this?
Yeah, so I have the Arctic 45, which is nice, but I think the garage cooler generally should be a 20 to 30 quart with substantial, because it's going to be in the garage, it's going to be hot. You got to have a little bit better than average cooler. But I think that 20 to 30 quarts is
cooler's hot. Cooler's hot from being in the garage, so you got to get that solid chunks of ice, get it cooled down nice. Dude, I'm fine. I'm jonesing on this. I like it because I marketplace like one of those nice, it was, I don't know, maybe $200-$300, the nice sliding door like you see in a gas station fridge, because I have I'm a construction worker, so like having like cold Gatorades, like fridge temp Gatorades and water, when I throw them in the cooler in the summertime, this makes my ice last that much longer. And, you know, when you got five or six guys, I got like a 70 quart Pelican cooler, and there ain't room for frozen jugs of stuff in there because I just need as much liquid as possible for everyone. Well, then that, sure. You know, the work cooler, you know, as we get closer to Friday, you know, there's less water, less Gatorade, than, you know, the Bush lattes might sneak in there, that kind of thing. So then that rotates into a, you know, weekend cooler too. But I like that. I like the play in the long term with like, don't even need to make a trip. Like, you already got everything you need, right?
Yeah. My buddy Zoe and I used to do this. Like when we were like in our 20s, and he'd drive over from Dayton, and we'd like, you know, yuck it up on a Saturday or whatever. But we'd like, a lot of times we'd put the 12, he'd be coming over and I'd be like, dude, I prepped the cooler already. Like, the beers are not in the fridge. No, they are in a cooler on my countertop, covered in ice water, like the ice cold slushy mix to reach in there and grab a can. And we'd watch some Whitetail Adrenaline generally before heading out. So,
all right, so that's the beer garage talk for pizza. So your pizza thing has a whole new meaning to me now, because I did not even take into the consideration of, I'm at home, what am I pulling out of the fridge or the freezer for pizza? And I would say,
yeah, where you at?
Oh man, I'm something about Jack's Pizza. Just like, I think it's just been a joke at work for so long. You get, you know, they have 3 for $10 deals going on all the time. We always joke around Jack's Pizza. So I have to go just a pepperoni Jack's, and I'm the guy that like just cooks it. And I don't even like make a bunch of pieces. Like, I am like 4 slices per pizza, big slice of Jack's Pizza, load up Parmesan cheese, a little pepper maybe. And that's what I call it, you know? So that's kind of my thing.
Hot sauce, ranch, or red pepper flakes.
I'm a weak boy when it comes to hot stuff. I love the taste of, you know, a little spice, but I cry real easy. I'm a baby when it comes to that, but I would probably do a little bit of, I'll do the red pepper. Just do a little bit of that. Probably not crazy, but just enough, and then I'd be good.
You can neutralize it then with the ranch afterwards. Like,
true, I do like ranch.
Yes,
I would pick ranch. I like that because, you know, I like folding. When you do the Jack's Pizza, it's thin. Just fold that bugger in half, and you're good to go. So that's great for dipping. You know, already big slice folded. I do like that.
Yeah. Okay. I do cut mine to like fancier, like the thin crust slices that are sometimes like an inch or two wide. I do, man. I break it down.
Love it. You have like a, do you have a template in mind? Like, okay, this pizza, you have a game plan. Like, here we go. All right. So what is your like number one thing that you feel like you have to work on and get ready by? Is your opener is like what? You sometimes late September?
Yeah. Last week of September.
So what do you have? What's your number one thing right now, standing here in front of your face, that you like, I have to do this before opening day of bow season?
Yeah, I had two things. I think one, reps with the stick. That's a continuous thing. You can't put that away and then just pull it back out. And then two, I will be testing probably some XOP prototypes. That's just something I got to do as far as what I don't know. I work with those guys at a not full level, but at a level.
Okay,
so I got to figure out that system.
Get that, how you want to do that. Like, you're talking like test it out before
you can show up. Figure out where I'm going to put the sticks on a stand if I'm saddle hunting, and what bag might work with that. I got to do every year. I don't know if you've known this, but like the fall before they came out with their newer higher end lineup, like I was testing those, and I got handed those like November 1, which kind of sucked. You know, mid-season, you're going to change your system. But yeah, like this time, like, we'll be ahead and I'll be able to try and tinker with some of the new what may come.
Yeah, just so when you, the first tree you go up there and you're like, I'm climbing this to hunt, you have everything just ready. Like, you know, you want to get that comfortable with it. Okay. All right. Let's see what else I had in mind for that. So mine would be find a target buck. I think I have one in mind that I got a picture early this year that could be him. So that's like my number one priority, find a deer to hunt. And then my second one is there's a couple of doors I want to knock on to get some more permission. And then thirdly, decide how crazy I want to go on state land this year. Like, how many cameras am I going to set? I'm still debating on that, which I got time, right? I mean, I got a few months yet here. So those are like my three things that are like always rotating through my head, like find the deer, knock on a couple more doors. Cause you know, I know what fields have what crops in it now. So that kind of helps me decide where I'm going to possibly try to, you know, cause I think some of these spots, like they're not great deer hunting spots. So I have a better chance to get permission, but like, I don't want to waste the time if it's like a certain crop, because I feel like I can, you know, it's kind of how I work, but, yeah, that's that. And then, yeah, we're ready to rip. So hopefully I find that. And then I have one more thing for you. Look behind my shoulder here. I got a stack of sheds and a couple deadheads. So you, my sir, have somehow found time to figure out a system that maybe that could assist me with that. Why don't you kind of break down what I should do with this deadhead that I got sitting here behind me?
Yeah. So last week I did launch a small company. I'm going to call it a company, but it's literally just a solution to a guy that wants to put a couple antlers on the wall and doesn't want to pay an arm and a leg. And this occurred to me when I was working in the garage and I got some deadheads up there and I was like, I'm going to put a couple sheds up on the wall here. I got some nice match sets. Like, this would be sweet. So I went to Amazon, $25 to get the cheapest. And then like the other options that were like $39 to $59. And I'm like, dude, you do the math. You got $100 some odd to just get four antlers on a wall. I said, surely there's a better way. So, kind of got some ideas flowing and, ended up getting a guy to get me a bracket, essentially is what I'm calling it. That can go into a drywall or a wood surface, and it's got an opening to essentially accept some fastening. And yeah, basically two of those can either hold a deadhead, or most sheds take two of the brackets. Okay. And super affordable. Like, you could put like six antlers on the wall for under $25.
Ooh,
it's kind nice. Of, yeah. That was like, there's gotta be other guys that want to put a couple sheds on the wall that like, you know, they just want antlers on the wall. They found this sweet shed and yeah, it's not like a trophy of a buck they killed, but like, yeah, let's put it on the wall. It looks sweet. Look way better than a pile. Yeah. And then when I figured out the same bracket could do a deadhead, it's like, wait a minute. So a guy can order the $25 kit, put four sheds on the wall and two deadheads. Like, maybe I got something.
Yeah. Cause I do. This is like so real life for me right now. I got my European mount back from a deer I shot last year. And I was like, man, I bought some brackets. I know I have one left somewhere. And I found it, put it on the wall. And I was like, man, I was like, how much were those? I looked them up. Dude, it was like you said, $20 some for one bracket to hold one European mount. And I have this nice deadhead I found that just is laying here on the side. That's what I kind of thought when I put the other European mount. I'm like, oh, you know, I got that deadhead. That'll kind of look great, you know, set up right down here. And I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I don't need that. And then I saw your video and like you launched this and I'm like, oh dude, like, yeah, you're onto something. Cause I have some cool sheds. I found my first nice match set last year and they're just in a pile. And I'm like, that's kind of, to me, that was kind of a cool thing. Right. I've walked miles and miles and miles to try to find sheds and do these things. And yeah, having them like, you know, on display a little bit or kind of hanging off maybe something else, like, that's cool. Yeah. And affordable, man. I like that too. So where do I find this? Like,
yeah,
what is this?
G2 mounts. It's on Instagram with a link right to the Shopify. Same thing with like Whitetail Experience. I've got a little link profile thing that either takes you to YouTube or G2 mounts or like a couple other like gear type sites. But okay. Yeah, it's pretty easy to find if you follow the brand or just punch that into Instagram, you can find the page there.
And then anyone who doesn't have Instagram to find his thing, the Whitetail Experience, make sure you find Michigan Wild too, and you know, go to my thing, because I think if some, you know, some people don't have Instagram. I think one of the reasons why I got Instagram back in the day was for things like this. So if you're listening, go give the Whitetail Experience a follow and check out G2 and some YouTube too, and get yourself some. I like it. And are you doing all these orders and stuff yourself, or are you kind of partnering up with people to help you? Kind of, you're a busy guy, so I was just wondering how you're
fitting. Yeah. I right now am filling orders, but like as far as some of the, like the content, the marketing, and some of that stuff, like I'm getting outsourced on that. Like I'm partnered with some other people that I'm just like, dude, I can't just, you know, go shoot videos all the time. I got a day job. I'm working on something else too that I think could be good. Not in the hunting space.
Okay.
But, yeah. I got this fire this year to
I love
make
it.
Moves.
I love it because you're a calculated guy. So I mean, for you to, you know, spring and jump on these things is like, it's inspiring to me because I mean, I'm the same kind of way. Like I love working hard. I've been self-employed my whole life. So when other people go out and do the thing like you have done, I'm dude, I love it. Like, it's just like, yes, that's what makes this country great. Right. We can do that kind of stuff. So, all right, nice. Mister. Well, I think that'll kind of wrap up this episode. Appreciate you coming on and hopefully we can do this again. And
dude, this was a blast from the pizza talk to the beer cooler, the stick bow. There was enough hunting and BS there that This is 10 out of 10.
And not going to lie, I knew that's kind of how this would go with me and you because the way you like to talk and do stuff, I'm like, dude, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard you talk about stuff and I'm just like, you get me to like respond. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yes, like very. So I think it's cool. Like you challenge people. I know there's like I've been pretty like laid back on my like stance on some of these things. But like, you know, talking to someone else like that, we kind of share some things. It's not so much that we like look down on you because you use that maybe a little like razzing, like, hey dude, grow up, you don't need to use a crossbow, like kind of like that, why are you shooting spikes when you could, you know, that kind of stuff I think is healthy, but like also we're concerned like moving forward. So it's a cool conversation with you and I do appreciate that. So yeah, give us one more time, where can we find you?
And we'll end Whitetail Experience, Instagram, YouTube, we might have a TikTok somewhere out there, but yeah. Yeah, those are the main areas, and everything can lead you to G2 mounts if you want to pick up some antlers.
Heck yeah, support them that way. So, all right, well, hey, just like he said earlier, you know, he's got a little kid that's 4, and I kind of asked you, you know, how you plan on getting him hooked to being out, you know, being an outdoorsman, and you made it very simple and very basic. You were like, hey, make sure you just get the kid out there, and I love that. It's kind of my thing. So, hey, everyone, make sure you get out there this week. Enjoy the 4th if you have already. I'm not sure when this is going to drop, but here in a few weeks, but me and you are looking forward to finding some velvet bucks. But hey, thanks everyone. Thanks for listening to the show.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.